Welcome everybody into this live edition of Football Americas alongside Hercules Gomez. I am Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us. Boy, Herc, have we got a show for the good folks at home. Some great guests lined up. We got Alex Morgan of the U.S. Women's National Team. She's going to help us look ahead to that semifinal against Canada at the Gold Cup, plus look back on that very chippy affair against Colombia over the weekend in the quarterfinals. We're also going to hear, Herc, since you got your Oakland Roots gear on, from USL President Paul McDonough. That season is about to kick off, both USL Championship and USL League One this week. And, of course, that's available for you here on ESPN+. And finally, we're going to hear from Nelson Rodriguez. He's the Executive Vice President of Sporting Product and Competition at MLS. He's going to help us answer some of the questions that we all have about MLS and their now limited participation in the upcoming U.S. Open Cup. But let's start, Herc, on the field with Major League Soccer, because that is where we witnessed something very, very special this past weekend. Inter Miami at home taking on Orlando, the game of the weekend across MLS, Herc, and really, it was not even a game. 5-0 the final score. Luis Suarez scored twice in the first 11 minutes. Lionel Messi had a brace with goals 5 minutes apart in the second half. How about that performance? After Herc, what we said last week was the worst performance of the Messi era, they sure turned it around.
Yeah, that's an understatement. We see right there, look at Messi, look at this. What? Oh no, a little faint and chested in over four players. Like, it's just not even fair at this point. And then it's gonna get worse. Luis Suarez, they're gonna catch up to you. Looks like your knees hurt. Messi's not good with his head. Wait, what's going on here? It's like the Globetrotters playing in Miami.
Inter Miami in Fort Lauderdale put up La Manita, an incredibly impressive scoreline against their in-state rivals and one of what many folks thought was one of the top teams coming into this season across Major League Soccer. What's your biggest takeaway from the 5-0 we saw from Lionel Messi and friends?
Where do we start? Mea culpa. I mean, listen, we don't have the truth, and we go by what we see. And what we saw against the Galaxy, what we saw against Real Salt Lake was a team that lacked legs, a team that was going to get severely punished in transition, a team that had deficiencies defensively. And what we saw against, mind you, not just any team, a team that many, including this guy, has going very far. I got him going to the MLS Cup final in Orlando City, their supposed rival. There wasn't even a rival. You know what I learned out of this game, besides that they just, if they're on, when they're on, they're going to beat anybody on this continent. You know what I learned is maybe not so much in a 9-plus-month season, that's going to be Major League Soccer, how you can trust them, but certainly in a 7-game tournament, certainly in Leagues Cup, certainly in a potential, not anymore, but Open Cup, certainly in a Champions, a CONCACAF Champions Cup, that type of event, Inter Miami is going to be a favorite, and for good reason. If you give them a 6-7-game stretch where they can perform like this, there's not a team in North America that competes with them, that stays with them. The way they were playing against Orlando City, who was supposed to be defensively tough, rigid, scrappy, going to be physical, they were chasing shadows. And Luis Suarez, whose knees hurt, looked everything but. Julian Gressel, who was finished, playing in the midfield. Why is he playing in the midfield? Looked like one of the best players this league has seen in quite some time. And Messi didn't even do anything in the first half. It was Luis Suarez and Julian Gressel's show. And then when Messi decided to show up, as he often does, he made it look so easy. I told you that Inter Miami wouldn't win a statistical award this season, and if they did, it was Drake Callender. Here we are, 3 weeks in. The leader of goals scored is Messi. The leader in assist is this man right there, Luis Suarez. And Drake Callender's proven me right so far. Yeah. But can they do this for 10 months? I don't know. I've got my doubts. In a 7-game stretch, a tournament, will they be a favorite? Absolutely. Yeah.
Feeling a lot better about my MLS Cup pick, feeling a lot better about my MLS Golden Boot pick, of course, which was Luis Suarez, and feeling very good about my MLS MVP pick, Herc, which you'll remember, was Lionel Messi. Now, 3 goals and 3 assists. Wow. I know, I went out on a limb through the first 3 games there. I think what for me was the most impressive was who it comes against. To your point, this Orlando City team is supposed to be very good, and it's also a rivalry game. Like, you don't expect a rivalry game to get out of hand like this. Plus, I think you mentioned it on the show last week. There was the history. We'd seen Orlando not just frustrate Messi, but frustrate Inter Miami and kind of have some success against Inter Miami. I really thought if anybody could keep it close, it would be this team. And I certainly thought that after the performance against the LA Galaxy. I don't know what they did to Luis Suarez's knee in the week since, but my goodness, it's magic. Or Herc, I don't know, do you think he was sandbagging it in the first 2 games?
No.
How do you explain a guy going from looking like he could barely move to banging home 2 goals in a rivalry match?
We said it last week. He started this way in the Brazilian league. He was very slow out of the gates. And when he started scoring goals, nobody could stop the guy. That's why he was MVP of the Brazilian league last year. On the same knee. Same knees, if you'd like. Now, he didn't have these opportunities against Real Salt Lake. He didn't have these opportunities against the LA Galaxy. They didn't. Julian Gressel didn't have time on the ball. Messi didn't have the freedom to pick out headers and put him where he wants against those two teams. You give this team space, they're going to hurt you. I don't care how old you think Luis Suarez is. I am convinced the whole knee thing was to get out of Brazil. Mm. Okay, this guy can still play and he's proven it. And Messi, he's levels and levels above most players in this league. So if you put him around competent players and surround them with legs, because listen, neither one of us questioned them going forward last week or the week before. That's not been our question, nor will it be our questions. We understand who they are going forward and what they can produce. Our questions are, well, can they defend? Our questions are, some of these teams in the past and in this season have left them hanging on the ropes when they shouldn't have. They should be killing them. They should be killing them, and they don't take advantage of it. And this is what happens when you leave good players hanging around. I'm not surprised by this going forward. I'm more surprised of what they did to Orlando City physically with the ball and how they neutralized a team that I had going very far this season. Yeah. Now, listen, you don't win the league in 3 games. Okay. And Orlando City's not going to lose the league in 3 games. This just solidifies how much I can trust Inter Miami in a 7-game tournament. They're going to be favorites in Leagues Cup, favorites in a CONCA Champions. But MLS Cup, you know how this goes. Copa America comes about. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be players leaving. They're going to miss a lot of time, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not willing to place my bets there yet.
Do you think this was them at their best? Because, I mean, it's the best that we've seen, but they're 3 games, Herc, into a 34-game campaign. I think it's fair to suggest that this team might get a lot better. And if that's the case, I mean, if at this rate they could put a 5-0 up on Orlando, you know, they don't even need to be at their best to look around the league and be like, there's nobody that can really hang with us.
All right, so this version of Luis Suarez, would you take him to Copa America if you're Marcelo Bielsa?
I think you take any version of Luis Suarez to Copa America if you're Marcelo Bielsa, and I think he will be there, yeah.
Okay, so he's gone. Okay. Messi, he's going to be gone with Argentina. Who knows, Federico Redondo may start playing very well alongside Messi, get the eyeballs of Scott.
So basically nobody in MLS can beat this team if those guys are there. That's what you're saying. As long as those guys are there, forget it.
If they're at optimal level, it's over. It's over. But they've not proven to be at optimal level 10 out of 10 games. And that's understandable, okay? That's understandable with the way this league is structured, with the way these players are going to be playing every 3-4 days, you know, CONCACAF Champions Cup. Summer rolls around, you've got Copa America, then you got Leagues Cup, et cetera, whatever you want to add in there, they will have in there. Remember what it was like when they were playing those 3-4 days games in a schedule. It was the preseason tournament, and it wasn't going so well when Messi wasn't on the field. So I'm not willing to bet right now on Inter Miami in the long haul, but these short tournaments, 7 games, yeah, that's a good flyer, right? I don't think it's a flyer. I think it would be favorites heading in for most bookies.
No questions about the Inter Miami offense coming into the season. Some about the defense, but to your point, they were good against Orlando. Just 3 shots on target allowed in that game. Couple other weird things in and around this game, Herc. DeAndre Yedlin started this game for Inter Miami. He's since been traded to FC Cincinnati. That was after the game. Before the game, the initial ref, which we'll remind you, was already a replacement ref. had to be replaced because some images surfaced on social media of him rocking Inter Miami gear. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, Herc. You just can't.
Oh my goodness. Where do you start here? Like, where do you just pay these refs? Pay the refs. Mm-hmm. Pay the refs. Like, why are you nickeling? Just pay the refs. Pay the refs.
Or at least pay him to wear something else other than Inter Miami shirts, right? My goodness there. Did not expect that. But I guess at the end of the day, all's well that ends well as Inter Miami gets the 5-0 victory against Orlando. Now, one thing that was definitely not a factor in that match was snow, because they played it in Florida. However, snow did play a factor in Snow Classico. Are we calling this 2.0, 3.0? Which one are we doing? RSL against LAFC playing through not just a snowstorm, but a lightning storm as well for Hugo Lloris there. He's like, what did I sign up for? This game, of course, played not in Los Angeles, in Sandy, Utah. RSL winning 3-0 thanks to a brace from Andres Gomez and a goal from Christian Arango. Here's an angry Steve Cherundolo after.
I'm not sure there are any positives other than we didn't have any injuries. It was not difficult conditions, impossible conditions. An absolute joke that we had to play today. Not safe for the players. One of the worst professional sporting events I've ever seen in my life. I feel terrible for the players. We put them through this. Game could have been and should have been called many times beforehand. In my opinion, an absolute disgrace that we played today.
An absolute disgrace, says Steve Cherundolo. Herc, do you agree with him?
All right, so this game was scheduled to kick off hours before it actually did kick off. 3 hours before it was scheduled to kick off, it actually kicked off. That's how much into this delay they got into. So that in itself is very difficult for the players. Now, I'll go by parts, okay? This game started off with an orange ball. You know what the orange ball was created for in soccer? Do you know what the orange ball is created for in soccer? Does anybody know? To play in snow! That's why it was created. Now, mind you, the 3 goals that LAFC shipped versus Real Salt Lake were before the conditions got really crazy. I mean, they were optimal conditions. And the goals that LAFC gave up, and I don't want to pick on Omar Campos, who's a young player who I think has a massive ceiling, but the
goals snow like this in Torreón?
You give up. Seb, in snow, on sand, in mud, whatever the case you may be, Omar Campos can't make the mistakes he made that led to those goals. All 3 of those goals. And by the time you try getting into it, this is where I would agree with Steve Cherundolo. The conditions were crazy. The conditions weren't optimal. Not the worst I've seen, mind you, okay? Not the worst, but certainly not ideal for anybody. Would it increase injury the same way excessive rain might increase injury, et cetera, et cetera. The conditions aren't the reason LAFC lost this game. Individual mistakes are the reason LAFC lost this game. The conditions are just an added bonus to this insult to injury because Real Salt Lake didn't have the most shots in this game. That was LAFC. Real Salt Lake didn't have the most corners in this game. That was LAFC. Who had the most mistakes in this game? That was also LAFC. They lost this game not because of the weather conditions, but because of individual mistakes.
Does it remind you at all of the original Snow Classico? I remember the protests from the Costa Rican side, and I always thought, well, if they would have nicked a point in that game, would they have been saying the same thing? Like, if the result, Herc, here goes a different way for LAFC, do you think we're hearing the same thing from Steve Cherundolo? Because I will say this, to his credit, he is very consistent when he gets something in his head. Remember, win or lose, he's always talking about the spending limitations in Major League Soccer. So I think when Steve Cherundolo has a point, it may not necessarily be affected by the outcome.
And I don't necessarily disagree. I'll leave you with this. Pablo Mascherani was asked about it, and he said it was horrible. He said it was one of those things where they mentally had to get over with, and one team did. The other team was stuck in the snow.
Is there any benefit to it from like a viral standpoint? Like it was all over the news today. You got a snow game. You got an orange ball. We always talk about how MLS kind of struggles to break through. It was on. I'm here in the DC office. It was the one thing that was discussed in PTI today from the soccer world. Not the MLS world, from the soccer world. They didn't talk about Lionel Messi and 5-0. They talked about the snow game.
Listen,
they said it was dumb and stupid to have played.
This goes everywhere. This goes everywhere. And every time there's a snow game, mm-hmm. every time there's a snow game around the world, you get viral images. It's one mm-hmm. of these things where there's a rite of passage, and unless FIFA is going to change their rules, change their conditions, you just got to go through with it. But one team has to win. What separates mm-hmm. those teams who win from those who don't? And you're right, Seb. It sounds like sour grapes. And oftentimes, that's what everybody will think it is, sour grapes, because you could have done enough to compete in this game. And the reason you lost wasn't the conditions.
There we have it. So LAFC in a snowstorm, losing 3-0 against RSL over the weekend. Elsewhere in MLS, Herc, a brand new tradition, the New England Revolution unveiling a new tea crate pregame routine where they throw a box of tea representing the opposition into a non-harbor at their stadium. What do you think of this?
It's supposed to be, we're not in Boston, but we're going to do the Boston Tea Party.
Yes.
And that's Steve Caldwell right there. I believe Steve Caldwell, one of their old
Revolution legend.
Revolution legends right there, throwing what I think is supposed to be a tea box of the Toronto FC opponent who ended up beating them at home. This is why we can't have nice things. Like,
Scott Caldwell.
Shout
out to Mr. Caldwell there. A reminder, ESPN FC available for you 7 days a week here on ESPN Plus. Don't miss a single episode.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
CONCACAF W Gold Cup semifinals coming up Wednesday night from San Diego. It's a rematch of the semifinals at the last Olympics, United States versus Canada. Brazil and Mexico, the other semifinal in the CONCACAF W Gold Cup. And joining us for more on the U.S. Women's National Team in the tournament at large, a player that needs no introduction, Alex Morgan. She joins us live from the U.S. Women's National Team camp in San Diego. Alex, I want to talk about the game coming up against Canada, but we got to start with this showdown against Colombia the other night. Can you explain to me why things got so chippy? And if indeed it was as chippy as it felt watching on television.
Yeah, I mean, you guys saw that, right? Like, it was very chippy. We expected it. I mean, I would say that Colombia is a very aggressive, very physical team. They're always trying to slow the play down, foul, and we were ready to play. We stepped up to the challenge. Obviously, after that defeat to Mexico, we were just ready for the battle. So I think you guys saw a pretty good professional win from this team.
A very good professional win. I also saw you getting a little chirpy. I want to know what language it was, because I know you got a little Spanish in you. You get a little Spanish trash talk in there?
I mean, to be honest, I don't even know what was said or what was done. I don't even know how I got a yellow. But I think that it helped rile up my team a little bit, which was an important point to that.
Okay. So you guys obviously struggled versus Mexico and put that behind you to play against what was one of the best teams in the World Cup, certainly the revelation of the last World Cup in Colombia. And that first half attack, I mean, why were you guys so successful? Three first half goals, Trinity, Jaden, and yourself up top. What was the key?
I think just our aggressive press was really important. That's how we drew the penalty for the first goal. And then just knowing that every back pass that we had in possession, they were going to press. So at times going long, and then just digging into the battles, getting getting stuck into tackles, knowing that we were, they were going to come in to tackle us if we had the ball at our feet for too long. So it was just getting quick passes and knowing there was, you know, going to be points of transition and points of turnover. So just kind of keeping our head through all of that, and getting an early goal always helps.
Alex, one of the things that was kind of so impressive about this performance is, as you mentioned, it comes on the heels of the game against Mexico. Take us inside the dressing room. You know, what was the team feeling after that defeat against Mexico? Because it's not just a loss in a tournament, but it's also a team that, while right now isn't a rival, potentially in the future, kind of could be.
Yeah, we hadn't lost against Mexico for many years. Since I was a newbie on the team, there was only a few of us on the, I think only me and Becky on the team at the time, last time we had lost them. And Mexico deserved that win against us this tournament. We didn't play well. We didn't execute the game plan well. We didn't take advantage of our opportunities, and they did. They had incredible chances and goals and put us on our heels. And it was a tough defeat in the locker room. I definitely had some words to share just about how we can't allow this to happen through 90 minutes. I mean, 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there, but a 90-minute match like we did against Mexico, just it wasn't in our DNA. It wasn't good enough.
Alex, I'm curious. I've certainly not in my lifetime. I was at the stadium when you guys played Mexico, seeing the U.S. Women's National Team be so divided in what is the home crowd. It definitely didn't feel like it was a U.S. Women's National Team crowd. Did it feel like that to you? Is that the first time you've experienced that? And what was that like for your teammates?
It was actually quite an exciting atmosphere. I definitely think there was more fans from Mexico than the U.S., which was probably the first time that we've experienced that on home soil. But regardless, it was a great atmosphere. It's our first W Gold Cup. It's the first time they're holding this tournament. So I think to see the turnout that this tournament's been getting, and especially the following that the Mexican women's team has been getting that maybe they haven't gotten in the past, it's great for them because clearly they're evolving as a women's side. And it is, you know, as hard as that defeat was for us, you always want to see the quality continue to improve across the board. And you're seeing that with Mexico.
Maybe this is a crazy question because Emma Hayes is obviously not with you guys, but have you felt the Emma Hayes influence yet? Because Twila, you know, is of a previous regime. Have you felt that influence yet with this team?
I will say I came in late to this camp, so I don't know if there was any meetings prior, you know, in the first week of preparation for the Gold Cup. But right now, you know, Twila is acting as head coach. As far as we know, she's making all those decisions. And I think that, you know, Emma is probably trying to be as involved as she can be. And of course, I'm sure she's starting to implement a new style through Twila, but we are, you know, we are acting under Twila's guidance and direction right now. But I'm really looking forward to getting Emma in. We actually can't wait, and you know, it's tough to see her still over in England right now. Obviously, she's having a lot of success with Chelsea.
You mentioned, Alex, that you were late calling. I got to get the story here. Like, where were you when you get that call that you're going to be brought into this roster late? And what were you feeling at the time, having been left off the initial roster?
So I had just gotten to Coachella for our tournament, for our preseason tournament with San Diego. I literally have been there for an hour. So I had to carry on a suitcase, assuming I was going to be gone for 3 days. Got the call and said, okay, now time to go to LA. Was there within 2.5 hours and then played the next night. So it was a little bit of a whirlwind, but at the same time, I understood that, you know, it was a long lead up to the Gold Cup, a lot of training sessions, anything could happen. I wanted to stay ready in case of injury or anything. And that's what I did. Worked hard, dug in with San Diego, did extra with Casey, our coach at San Diego, and wanted to just use this preseason as an opportunity for myself to grow as a player and as a teammate, and was fortunate enough to get the call.
You know, it's funny because it feels like you've been around forever, and I say that in the best possible way, but all of a sudden people are clamoring for this kind of new generation to come in. But here you are, 34 years old, in the last game, a very important game, you were involved directly or indirectly in all three goals. What's that competition like for you heading into roster selection for the Olympics or important tournaments like?
I appreciate you calling out the age there. That was a nice one. But yeah, does feel like I have been around forever. It's like I'm still fighting for a spot every camp. Every day, and there's new players coming up, completely deserving these call-ups, these starts, the goals that they're getting. You're seeing that with Jenna, with Jay, with Olivia, and these players are, you know, incredible, so impressive coming in to the international stage and really making a point of why they deserve to be on a roster. This roster of the Gold Cup, but also moving forward to an Olympics. So it's for sure a battle, but I think it makes, you know, Emma and Twyla's decisions really hard, and that's a good thing. All I want to do is make it hard for them to make a roster selection and just keep doing what I'm doing and, you know, making it difficult for them.
Alex, for the record here, you're dealing with a couple 40-year-olds, okay? 40-plus-year-olds.
Thank you.
You're fine. Don't worry about a thing. All right, let's talk about Canada. I mean, that's a real rivalry, as good as we got here in North America. Mm-hmm. How do you see the semifinals shaping up, and what do you expect on Wednesday night?
Yeah, it's going to be a physical match. But, you know, we've been watching Canada, obviously. They had a tough test against Costa Rica, having played them in group stage and pretty much dominating, and then Costa Rica coming to play and them having a tougher time trying to finish some chances. So for us, it's just getting our bodies ready for this next game. We know, you know, not only how that team plays, how Canada plays, but the personnel as well. I play with Kaylin week in and week out at San Diego. So it's going to be a good match, an exciting one for the fans.
Okay, Alex, here on Football Americas, we've got our segment we do called Drippin' or Trippin', and we have this Del Sol kit. It's the San Diego Wave Del Sol kit, which actually ranked number one, I believe, on our top five. Mm-hmm. And producer Beto wants it signed by Alex Morgan. Give us an impromptu Drippin' or Trippin'. If you like it, it's a Drippin'. If you don't like it, it's a Trippin'.
I'm just going to say it's Fuego. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it's my favorite kit so far.
What about the new ball? We also got the ball. Have you tried the ball? Have you seen it? What are your thoughts?
Ooh, I have tried it and has a nice dip, so can't complain.
All right. We expect some bangers this year in the NWSL, which, of course, you can watch across many platforms, but definitely right here on ESPN. Alex Morgan, thanks so much for the time, and good luck Wednesday night.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
All right, elsewhere in the CONCACAF W Gold Cup quarterfinals on Sunday, Mexico against Paraguay. Mexico going to go up 1-0 here through Jackie Ovalle.
Yeah, Mayra Pelayo, who's been absolutely lights out, finds Jackie Ovalle, who's one of the best players in this tournament, 1-0.
2-0 here. Karen Luna off the half volley in the second half.
Yeah, Luna's not been bad herself. Caught it right there nicely, and it's 2-0.
Just a minute later, Paraguay earning a penalty here. Any complaints, Herc?
No, penalty kick. Going to the spot right there. You can catch it right there. From behind, obvious penalty kick.
Paraguay with a quick chance to get back in the game. But Barreras lives up to her name. Not once, but twice.
Ah, double stop. She was massive. Look at this. It's not the greatest of penalty kicks, but the feeling in that stadium, you just knew she was going to stop it.
Big double save there from Barreras to keep Mexico up 2-0 in the second half. Later on, Paraguay with a corner kick. Camila Barbosa gonna make it 2-1.
Yeah, and it just trickles through Barreras' legs. And then right here, look at this. Stephanie Mayor with the one-on-one just comes on. Really should have put it away. She doesn't. Oh, but guess who does? Ovalle.
Ovalle, again, a brace to make it 3-1. Paraguay weren't done, though. Rebecca Fernandez, 3-2, her game on.
Yeah, and for a team that really never threatened, they all of a sudden started threatening.
Late corner kick, desperate moments from Mexico. Paraguay looking for an equalizer. But the Mexican defense clears, and Mexico survives an intense match. 3-2 victory to advance to the CONCACAF W Gold Cup semifinals. There you see the matchups coming up Wednesday, Brazil against Mexico. That one starts 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Deportes, Canada and the United States. The nightcap from San Diego. Coverage starting 10:15 p.m. Eastern time Wednesday night on ESPN Deportes.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To the Eredivisie, Herc, where, of course, we had PSV against Feyenoord, a game that, well, you know how it is, gets our CONCACAF blood running. Malik Tillman, 4 minutes in, 1-0 PSV.
This is dirty. Meg's a defender. Look at this. Presence of mind between two defenders, slips it in. Ridiculous goal.
18th minute. Feyenoord looking for a response. Route one stuff. Santiago Jimenez, one-on-one. Surely, Herc, it has to be. No! Saved.
Ah, you would have bet the house there. He picked his corner. Keeper came up big.
A little bit later on, PSV trying to play out of the back. Uh-oh, that's trouble. Yankuba Binte going to say thank you very much. It's 1-1.
I mean, worst possible error. Tries playing out the back. Gets his pocket picked right there. Finishes it off. Goalkeeper tries. Goes one way. He goes the other.
You remember my parlay from last week. That goal put us over. Big fat winner. 28th minute, Sergiño Dest, Herc, almost causing an own goal.
Yeah, Sergiño going forward is must-see TV. There's no bicycles here. It's just quick to the side. Let me use my speed and almost causes an own goal.
That one off the post. This one off the post. Tillman.
Yeah, and I don't know if the goalkeeper got a touch here. You can see Malik, he's waiting for it. Ah, I think the slightest of touches right there, Seb.
46th minute. Feyenoord looking to get something going through Santiago Jimenez. Doesn't miss by much here. Good chance there.
He's lively. He continues to stretch the field. Another defensive error right there he takes advantage of. And the shot's just right at the goalkeeper, though.
Santi would have multiple chances early in the second half. Here in the 61st, though, not gonna miss this.
No, not going to, and you cannot. Breaks that drought. It's a good little ball in, and it's a goal like that that can open up the floodgates because he needs it this year.
Number 20 on the Dutch season. 2-1, Feyenoord in the lead, 71st minute. Luke de Jong to Guus Til, and it's 2-2.
Yeah, Luke de Jong isn't just a goal scorer. He's a facilitator. Look at that nice silky ball right there, and what a finish, side netting.
Absolutely brilliant game. Great advertisement for the Eredivisie, PSV, and Feyenoord playing to a thrilling 2-2 draw. Here's what it means atop the table. PSV still enjoying that 10-point lead over the defending champions, Feyenoord, who are in second place. Let's get some post-game reaction from this one. Santiago Jimenez, here he is.
It was a really hard game. I think we both player teams wanted to win. So it was hard. Of course, we got the advantage in the second half, and we dropped the 2-0. So they deserve it because they fight to draw, and I think a draw was really fair because the two teams was attacking. Yeah.
How do you drive back home? I can imagine you personally have mixed feelings.
I think I have feeling that we could do more always, like after the game. And the thing is that it was our opportunity to be 7 points, and we couldn't do it, but we fight. It's a difficult, really difficult game, this pitch, and yeah, we do everything that we could. Yeah.
What about yourself?
I feel good, I feel fresh. I know last games I was not the Santi that the people know, so, and I want to come back to that Santi and to reach the level I got and more.
Yeah. Did you think about why in the matches before you weren't the real Santi and today you showed a bit of the old Santi again?
I don't know. I don't have the answer. If I got it, I would be always here, no? But of course, I work hard. I do the same things when I'm here and when I'm here. So I try to just focus and not think that much in the goal, just to play, to enjoy, and to do a game for the team.
Finally scored again in the Eredivisie after you also scored already in the Europa League, of course. In the first half, you went one-on-one. You had a lot of time to think. How is that, the thinking process?
I don't know. I don't even remember that I was thinking. It's just like I knew that I need to finish like that, and I think it was a very good save.
Yeah. Could you have done better in a way?
We always, after a big miss like this, a big chance, we always think like, oh, I could do better, but I'm really hard of myself, and I think it was a good finishing, but it was a really good save. But yeah, always you can do better.
Well, before this, there had been just the one league goal in all of 2024 for Santiago Jimenez at Feyenoord, but he breaks through against league leaders PSV for his 20th league goal of the season. Exciting news here at ESPN. USL and ESPN announcing last week a new multi-year media rights agreement where we'll have more than 400 live games across ESPN platforms this season. That's USL Championship and USL League One. ESPN Plus also going to be the exclusive home of the new League One Cup competition. Very excited about that. We're just part of the USL TV deal. Of course, there's a partnership with CBS, some local TV deals in there as well. Here's some things to look for in 2024. You got 24 teams in the championship, 12 in League One. By the way, the season kicks off this weekend. All 36 eligible USL teams will participate in the Open Cup. And how about a nice welcome for a couple expansion sides, Rhode Island FC in the championship and Spokane in League One. For more on the upcoming USL season, we're thrilled to be joined by USL President Paul McDonough. Paul, great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's dive in on this TV deal. Of course, you're excited to work with Football Americas and ESPN. But beyond that, Paul, it's really interesting because it's not the same deal we see a bunch of other leagues doing where maybe they're going with only one partner or they're going with a streaming service only. I think you guys, I know we're not supposed to talk about the competition here. I think you guys are going to have some games on big CBS. Is that correct? So tell me a little bit about the TV deal approach.
Yeah, it was really important for us going into this year that we could find partners that could help us get more relevance. And we found that in our two partners. We're really looking forward to it. We're going to be on ESPN over 400 times. We're going to have over 35 games on linear TV. For League One and the championship. So we just really think that it was really important for us to find partners that could allow us to get more relevance, could help us build our league, and we're really happy with where we ended up.
Paul, you're approaching about a year with the USL as their president, but before that you're with Major League Soccer for quite some time in different roles. I'm curious, now that you're on this side with the USL, is there anything that you have learned about the league or leagues in that case, if it's something maybe you learned about Major League Soccer as well that you didn't know before?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different, right? I think when you're working for a team, it's completely different than working in a league. So it's been really interesting to get into the league office. But I also think just the sheer size and scope of the USL, you know, with now we're starting the women's league. So we've got three professional leagues, two in the men, one in the women. We've got a pre-pro space, we've got a youth space. So, you know, from youth to pro, we have men and women, which is a very interesting thing for pathways for the kids. I also think it's interesting that the structures of the leagues are completely different. MLS is a single entity structure. We are a franchise model. So we have to do a lot more talking with our owners. They're all individual owners. So they have a big say in how they run their clubs. And sometimes when you get into certain things, you can implement a single entity mindset. But with us, all of our owners have to be on board in how we move forward.
Paul, one of the big stories for me last year in USL was the transfers. I mean, y'all were doing business with everybody, Europe, MLS. There's clearly some very good young talent in the league. One, do you expect that to continue? And what other kind of main storylines do you see being top of the table here in 2024 across both USL Championship and League One?
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting, right? I think more young players are coming in here and the clubs are starting to think about players in the transfer market. Over the last 2 years, I think we've done 16 transfers outside of the league. This year so far, we've done 8. So it's something that as they're building their teams, they really pay attention to it. And I think we'll see more and more of this. Players are looking at it. They're seeing what happened with Barajas. You know, he comes into the league. He plays really well with Charleston. And then he has an option to go to Mexico, to Europe. And he ends up going to Real Salt Lake on a really good deal for the club. And I think we're just going to see more and more of those.
You know, Paul, I'm still very curious about this. You working with Major League Soccer now with USL, just those maybe key differences and how the leagues operate that kind of stand out for you.
Yeah, I think the single entity structure, right? The league office has a lot of say in a single entity structure, and they kind of guide, and all the decisions made in Major League Soccer are good for the collective whole. In our league, you know, we speak with all of our owners, but each owner, they're their own boss, and they can be driven by their own ambition. And sometimes that creates a lot of differences of opinions on how we move forward. So I think that that's a really, really big differentiation in the leagues. We have some owners in some leagues that are in the leagues that are super ambitious. We have some that are just staying pat, and we get a real diversity in how they look at things.
Paul, where are we at on promotion relegation? I want to ask you about, you know, potential changes to competitive structures, and that could be anything, right? That could be maybe changing your calendar to be on the FIFA calendar. But for me, whenever we talk about USL, the amount of teams, the two leagues, it just seems set for pro rel. So do you feel like you're the guy to make that happen? And what would that mean for USL?
Oh, look, I think it's a differentiator. You know, when Hercules talks about what's the difference, I think pro rel is one of those things, but getting to it, I think if we were in the MLS structure, it would be easier. It's a lot harder in this structure because you have 36 owners right now that have very different opinions on what it is, how it impacts them. So we are doing the work on it. We're having good conversations with the owners, but it's just really more complex than anyone could give it credit for, right? You know, when teams get relegated, they go from Division 2 to Division 3. What does that do to their valuations? When teams go from Division 3 to Division 2, the travel budgets and the roster budgets get completely different. So we're doing a lot of work with them to talk about it. We're prepared to do the work. And really, it's just important that we do it right. It's just not one of those things you can just throw out there.
Paul, I'm sorry. Did you say it's easier for MLS in their current structure to have pro rel than you guys?
I think if you get them all together, right, and the single entity structure could agree to do it because it's good for the collective whole, that it's easier in that sense, right? Here we have every different owner that isn't bought into our league, and it impacts them completely different.
All right. Okay, that makes sense. Let me ask you now. Open Cup. Why is it important for the USL to stay in the Open Cup competition when pretty much all but 8 Major League Soccer teams have bowed out? I mean, the first division isn't there. Why is it important for USL to be there?
Yeah, we went through the process, right? We talked a lot with our owners. You know, when everything happened in December, it was pretty disappointing. We applauded US Soccer for making a quick decision to tell them they had to stay in. Then when we were having good conversations through January, and then all of a sudden at the end of January, something changed. And now we're back to kind of a December mindset. So we went and we talked to all of our owners, and we wanted them to make their own individual decisions. It was very emotional. They went back and forth a lot about what they wanted to do. And we were split more in favor of playing, but we had some that didn't want to play. But the conversation, you know, that we had as an ownership group with the league office was it was better that we all try to get in and stay and see if we can make this work. We have 47 teams through League 2, League 1, and the championship in it. I think it was important that we participate and see where it goes.
You've said recently that you were disappointed in the Federation for not showing stronger leadership. What do you think would have been strong leadership in this instance? What would you have liked to see U.S. Soccer do?
Look, I understood the schedule congestion for the CONCACAF teams when it came up. If they had asked me if I was on board with that, I would have said yes. I think the hard part for me was I think they showed an enormous amount of leadership because they adhered to the pro league standards and the fact that the tournament already started in December, I think letting this get to the stage that we're at now, it's been 3 months of just nonsense. And how can you say that you want the fans to get behind this? But we're in it now, and the most important thing is our teams do a good job, try to promote it, and see if we can get it going in the right direction.
Paul, two-part question here, so stay with me for a second. What's the impact on USL when the majority of Major League Soccer doesn't play in this tournament, your teams? And secondly, the players and the fans, what are they missing with the First Division Major League Soccer not being in this tournament?
Yeah, look, I think it's important that the MLS is in it, right? They're the bigger stadiums. They've got the best players. You know, it's really important for the revenues, but they chose not to be in it. So we just have to try to embrace it. We have a lot of the same issues now that they had, right? They didn't want to play each other. But our teams have to all play each other and knock each other out for the right to try to get to the eight, to play the eight of them. So it's not great. I think the fans, it's important, right? You see a lot of the sentiment out there. And I think the only thing you can say is that the fans need to get behind this tournament and go out and support it, right? If everybody wants it so badly, then show that it deserves to be here. So go out, watch the matches, see the amateurs play the League One teams and NISA and those types of things. And then go watch, you know, those teams go in and play the championship and then the championship to the MLS.
Paul, I'm looking for a silver lining here, certainly from a USL perspective, and I think I've got one. The CONCACAF Champions Cup spot is still going to be available, correct, to the winner of this tournament. You guys were so close with Sacramento Republic a few years ago. What would it mean to have a USL team win Open Cup and potentially represent the league in a regional tournament?
Yeah, no, look, I think it would be important, but I think, you know, it's clear what I've been told is it's more tied to MLS participation and not to the U.S. Open Cup itself. Mm. So that's kind of a little wrinkle that we had learned over the last couple of months. But look, I think it's important, right? Sacramento went on a great run, and it's important, right? And our teams look for that, and they want to play in those competitions and play against those teams. So now there's eight of them, and, you know, we know that there will be some championship teams playing and League One teams playing against, you know, MLS teams in the round of 16. So we'll just, you know, kind of see where it goes.
All right, Paul. Well, I, for one, cannot wait for the Open Cup, but even sooner, cannot wait for the start of USL Championship and USL League One. That's coming up this weekend right here on ESPN+. Paul, thanks so much for the time.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's a look at the USL Championship schedule for the upcoming weekend. Boy, what a slate on Saturday. Herc's hometown Las Vegas Lights. They're going to be taking on Memphis. Ooh, Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Have you seen their new kits? Got to get me one of those. They're taking on New Mexico United. And my local 11, Loudoun United, up against San Antonio FC. Just some of the action you can catch as the USL Championship kicks off its schedule this weekend. Herc, big news Friday, news we've been waiting on. U.S. Soccer announcing the format for the 2024 U.S. Open Cup, confirming that only eight of a possible 26 teams from Major League Soccer will have their first teams participate. Those teams are Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, of course your defending champs, LAFC, RSL, San Jose, Seattle, and Sporting Kansas City. Nine MLS teams will be represented by their MLS Next Pro side. Which, of course, we know is third division. All right, for more on the MLS perspective on all of this, thrilled to welcome into the show Nelson Rodriguez. He is the Executive Vice President of Sporting and Competition over there at MLS. Nelson, just want to thank you, first of all, maybe take some of the tension out of the air. This is obviously a very charged topic, but I do appreciate you coming on with us here on Football America. So welcome to the show.
I appreciate it, guys. It's nice to finally be invited.
There you go. The first of many appearances.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's get into this. Of course, we're going to talk about this probably mostly, Nelson, from a why are the first division teams of MLS not in the Open Cup? But I know from having heard from people on the MLS side, a big part of this is for you guys getting your MLS Next Pro teams into the competition. So I want to give you kind of the opportunity to address that here first. Why is it so important for those teams to be involved in this tournament?
Well, look, I think the question is, why would they be excluded from the tournament? They're a professional Division III side, just as League One and NISA and all the rest. You know, MLS invests a lot of money in player development. Some of the benefit of that is to the broader U.S. soccer ecosystem, and certainly, hopefully, to the U.S. national teams, both full men's and youth. So we always felt that it was right and proper to give those players an opportunity to compete in meaningful games. I understand that for some people, a dual ownership would disqualify that from happening, although we've seen that in other parts of the world and continues in certain parts of the world where a parent club and an affiliated club can compete in an Open Cup competition at the same time. But when U.S. soccer wouldn't permit that, that's when we decided to push still for as many MLS Next Pro teams as we could.
Nelson, help us understand where the decision for Major League Soccer not being fully participants in the Open Cup came from. Like, what are the motivational factors coming in here? And when do you first remember these conversations happening?
Well, I think, Herc, that first, Major League Soccer has been pretty consistent with its belief that the tournament deserves more. And we have tried within the confines and the right way to express that opinion and work with constituents and with U.S. Soccer directly to deliver more to the Open Cup. I've been involved directly for several months. And I've always spoken to the people to whom I've been directed by U.S. Soccer to speak. And, you know, what we've wanted above everything is just for the tournament to be better for the participating teams, to be better for the players, to be better for partners, to be better for fans. And so a lot of our objectives were hopefully intended to make the tournament better. Greater investment from U.S. Soccer on a lot of levels, and I'm happy to go into any specifics. We thought it would be better for the tournament for pro teams to play non-pro opponents, or in MLS's case, for us to play non-MLS opponents and build the tournament so that there's more featured games between amateurs and pros and have the tournament build in its drama as it goes through. We also were very focused on standards. You know, we think that the standards of the tournament could and must improve the venue, the fields, the broadcast standards, how much marketing goes into the tournament. So our motivation was to try to make the tournament better. In that process, for sure, there were things that MLS was looking for. MLS Next Pro participation was one. Another was, as we looked at the calendar, and this is why we asked for a waiver for 2024 only, when we asked for all our MLS Next Pro sides to be in, was just the overall calendar with Copa America and Nations League and the Olympics. There's a lot of players who are going to be logging a lot of time, and we wanted to be mindful of that.
Nelson, since this was discussed and really kind of first became public, we've heard reaction from kind of all over American soccer, but specifically in MLS, we've heard from some coaches who said that they want to play and want to win this trophy. We've heard from some players who don't want to be kind of pulled out of the Open Cup. When you guys were both reaching this decision and then kind of taking it, what was the feedback like internally around MLS? Was it unanimous that everybody kind of wanted out?
No, it wasn't. And this is, as you've indicated, this is a topic that evokes a lot of passion. And our decisions didn't come lightly, and they didn't come without considering all points of view, including the point of view and the input of fans. You know, we conducted a fan survey in the fall of 23, and a lot of what came out of that fan survey reinforced our belief that the tournament needed attention, that the tournament needed resources, that the tournament needed investment. So we recognized that this was going to require sacrifice on everyone's part or many teams' part. This is for 24 only. It's our understanding that U.S. Soccer will convene a working group to discuss 25 and beyond, and we hope to participate in that working group and find a tournament and a tournament format that works for everybody.
Nelson, you've been around forever in Major League Soccer. I remember you being with Chivas USA. You were a GM with Chicago Fire. You go way back, and I don't understand in this tournament why some teams don't take it seriously. It's seven games. You get a trophy. You get money, and you get a CONCACAF Champions Cup spot. Why not let these individual teams make their own decisions on whether they take it seriously or not, if they want to field kids like Liverpool does in the FA Cup in the earlier rounds? If it's good enough for Liverpool, why can't it be good enough for the Colorado Rapids?
It may very well end up there, Hercules. I know from, you know, personal experience when I was with Chicago Fire, we tried very hard to win that tournament in every match. We played the majority of our best 11, if not our whole best 11, from the first match we were assigned to as long as we went in the tournament. And I do think it's important that clubs be able to find their own path and their own way. Every club's in a different evolutionary cycle. Every club has different pressures. When I was with Chicago, it was the pressure to try to restore some glory to the city and to the club. And there's a proud history of the Open Cup with Chicago Fire having won four of those already. So I do think that the possibility of allowing clubs to choose their own destiny is real, and we'll discuss that with our clubs and with U.S. Soccer going forward.
Nelson, help me square something here, because you keep saying kind of what the tournament needs, that the tournament needs more. And listen, you're not going to find two guys in the media that love the Open Cup more than us two, but we will fully acknowledge that, you know, the tournament absolutely 100% needs to grow. But help us square the idea that the tournament can grow, can get to where you want it to get to with less MLS input and less MLS participation.
Well, I think for starters, what you want is teams, as Hercules just said, who are dedicated to the tournament, who want to compete, who want to win, who want to help promote. I don't think you want any club looking at this as a nuisance. And so I think the investment that's required and comes in the form of, let's start with travel allowance. You know, I steadily said to U.S. Soccer in all my meetings with them, no team should play in this tournament at a financial loss. You know, for an amateur team to have to be at a financial loss to play in the tournament just does not seem right to me. And I also think it's a little bit unfair to rely on just MLS's revenue generation to backstop or subsidize the entirety of the tournament. I've mentioned the standards, and I think upholding those standards are important. You know, it's difficult to understand what the draw is for the tournament. You know, how are teams paired against one another? Is it known ahead of time when you win a match who your next opponent would be? I think all of those types of things are the attention and resource that we respectfully tried to request of U.S. Soccer on numerous occasions. And that goes beyond the number of MLS clubs that are in it. And again, we have 17 sides. You know, we have the eight other CONCACAF Champions Cup sides that we've set aside. I heard Paul say he would understand that, and we appreciate that. So we think that there's a lot of work that can be done there. We're prepared to help support U.S. Soccer and all the other constituents, USL, NISA, the amateur division, to have this be the unifying event that it can and should be for soccer in America.
What about this argument for fixture congestion? Because obviously that's being used with a lot of these teams that are in CONCACAF Champions Cup. And for me, it's just kind of it's a difficult pill to swallow. I understand Leagues Cup exists, right? And I kind of even understand why that exists. But put Leagues Cup aside. Like, I live in Washington, D.C. D.C. United has scheduled five in-season friendlies over the last 2 years, and they played four Open Cup games in that time. They just announced, D.C. United, a partnership where they're going to play the Ethiopian national team at Audi Field this year. For those that don't know, you know, Washington, D.C. is by far the largest Ethiopian-American community in the United States. There's no question as to why that game is being played. So, Nelson, help us understand how we can kind of take that fixture congestion argument when even beyond Leagues Cup, there are so many other games, games that I would argue are unnecessary, popping up on the schedule.
Yeah, it's a fair question, Sebastian. And it's not just about fixture congestion. I also think it's about player load. The distinction there in my mind is congestion is principally around a high number of games over a short period of time. But that player load is cumulative over the course of a season. And again, this speaks to club choice, club decisions as to how they want to manage player load, how they want to manage their roster, how they want to find fixtures that help develop emerging talent. And all of these things conflict at times and compete. Allowing teams to find the right choice for them is an important consideration, has to fit into some broader objectives that we may have as a league, that the USL may have for its league, that NISA may have for its league, and so on and so forth. But I think they're not incompatible. And as we looked at the calendar again, looking ahead to late last year into 25, we saw a lot of these matches. And there's more national team events, more confederation events. The FIFA Club World Championship next year has become bigger. The Open Cup will be impacted in whatever form it takes in 2026 by having the World Cup in our country. So I think that's what's dictated here is getting all the constituents in a room at the same time to work together to find a solution.
Nelson, what about the responsibility that MLS plays in American soccer? I'm thinking about the FA Cup and a Manchester United, a Liverpool, those big clubs and the responsibility they play in that pyramid. And I think about this way, especially since the U.S. Open Cup is the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, one of the original owners of Major League Soccer. Without him, MLS probably wouldn't be where it is today. Does MLS have a certain amount of responsibility when it comes to American soccer?
Yeah, I believe we do. And I believe part of that is at times leading. And we, in this instance, understandably disagreeable to some, we tried to lead. And we tried to lead a situation that would bring about positive change to the Open Cup for all the competing teams and for fans across who support any league or any team in it. So we accept that responsibility. We understand that with that responsibility comes criticism or difficult decisions from time to time. But the league has supported the Open Cup, has made serious intentions to win the Open Cup, and has been fortunate enough to win the Open Cup for, you know, I think since 1999. So I hope our interest in that way isn't doubted. We just want to see things get better.
So let's put on paper what maybe some of those things to get better are, because you mentioned before improvements and maybe you had some specific suggestions. I think what we all want to see at the end of the day is all or as many as possible MLS teams in the Open Cup. What would it take? What are those improvements, Nelson, that you would say, okay, you know what, this competition is at the level for all MLS teams or a majority to be involved?
Well, first, it's time to give U.S. Soccer some credit here because they have made improvements in the travel allowance. They have made improvements in the scheduling where we have more of the proverbial David versus Goliath and the opportunity for more of those to take place later in the tournament. You know, eight championship teams were seated alongside the eight MLS teams. We think that's a net positive so that later in the tournament, we have more opportunities for cup sets rather than just like teams from the same league playing and defeating one another. So we think those are improvements. We'd like to see improvements in the broadcast standards and in the marketing and advertising of the tournament so that fans know where to go see it. You know, our fan survey in October of last year showed that of core MLS fans, only 18% could accurately tell where the tournament was being shown via broadcast partner. Only 18%. And the Open Cup itself was the third most interesting and most important championship that MLS clubs participated in, garnering only 6% of respondents. This clearly shows that we collectively, we all need to do a better job to make this event where it belongs.
All right, there he is, Nelson Rodriguez of Major League Soccer. Nelson, thanks so much for the time tonight. Appreciate you being a good sport and coming on and taking the punches as we threw them at you.
Hey, guys, I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you and the fans. Keep up the good work.
There he is, Nelson Rodriguez. Great to have him with us here on Football Americas. Herc, what do you say? We always ask for more transparency. We certainly always ask of it for Major League Soccer. So I got a lot of respect for Nelson for coming on here, especially with some of the scathing commentary that this show has done about the Open Cup situation of late.
We appreciate both sides and the discussion with both sides, and we're open to more of it, Don.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Yes, we'd like to get more contributors here. I'm working on some folks at U.S. Soccer, so maybe maybe later this week or next week we'll get the U.S. Soccer perspective, because we do need to get that perspective as well on what exactly went down with the U.S. Open Cup. All right, we will be back, Herc, on Thursday. Lots to get to on that edition of the show. Of course, we will know the finalist for the CONCACAF W Gold Cup. We'll be trying to get some interviews with Kyle Larin and Luca De La Torre. They got some big games coming up in La Liga. And speaking of big games, Herc, this weekend, Club America Chivas, part one of a three-part saga, baby. Hey. Show them what you're wearing, Mr. Roots.
The little Oakland Roots. This is a sick jersey. Also, producer Beto and I making our way to San Diego on Wednesday.
Ooh, all right. Road trip in Football Americas. Look out, San Diego. The boys are heading south. We'll see you Thursday.